I'm an addict. My name's Eddie. And I'm clean today by God's grace. Striving real hard one day at a time to allow His grace and mercy to be sufficient in my life. Thank you. Thank you. I say thank you because Narcotics Anonymous has provided a proven plan for my daily reprieve. One day at a time, I found out through personal experience that I never have to use again. And that's a beautiful thing. If you come from where I come from, that's a beautiful thing. I'd like to take the opportunity to say welcome, heartfelt welcome, to anybody that's new to the recovery experience. Narcotics Anonymous is a wonderful place to be. It offers an opportunity for you never have to go back to that destituted, devastating life of active drug addiction. I don't know where God's going to take me, but I know where He brought me from. And I just want to relish in that. I just want to be real grateful just for that. Because one day at a time, some days, today in this addict's life, just not putting dope in me, sometimes that'd be about the gist of it. I get through the day without putting something in me. I get an opportunity one day at a time to take this position, and I don't take it lightly. I believe that the process in Narcotics Anonymous and the dynamics that takes place in the group setting, you know, it's two positions. One is the one where you sit. And the other one is the one where I am. Now, the ironic thing is that neither one of them work by themselves. So I need your help. You know, I need your help to allow the spirit of love and unity to touch you. Because if you let it touch you, it can come back to me. And I need love. I need that. You know, and I've gotten it here in Narcotics Anonymous. I bring you greetings from the Free State region, Baltimore area. Keep Stepping Home, group of Narcotics Anonymous, where we meet every Thursday at 7 p.m. We do invite you to come and share in the miracle of recovery at our home group. I got clean November 15th, 1990. Product of relapse. Relapse is not a requirement for recovery, but it was a reality of my life. It was that jarring, devastating experience. It gave me that it was that nuclear blast that the literature talks about. You know, and I was able to come back here and I got busy in recovery. Doing the simple stuff. Listening. Praying, going to meetings, not picking up, getting with my sponsor. Working the steps in my life. And I started to see my life take a change. And I felt real good about it. You know, I felt real good about it. Something ever worked for you? You know, especially something that you didn't think was going to work. I really didn't think the program was going to work for me. But lo and behold, it was working for me. You know, and the way that I assessed that was that I went to bed every night and I hadn't put nothing in me. See, I measure my life by, you know, getting through stuff without putting something in me, you know, because life presents me with 24 hours to make all these decisions and choices. And it feels kind of awkward, you know, because there was before I only had one choice, I only had one decision to make, you know, and now I got all these other decisions, you know, and it gets a little crowded up here sometimes. What part did I play? You like that question? You know, I'm going to take the opportunity and I'm going to try real hard and I ask God to do what He need to do with me so I can give you a little piece of me. But I'm going to share some of my life with you and I hope you can tell me what part I play. What? Because I ain't always got the ability to see what part I play. I'm not going to make no excuses. I got the disease of addiction for real. I really got it. And what it does oftentimes is it doesn't allow me to see the part that I play. Come on, God, one time, here you come. That's why I need to come to a place where there's people that's just like me, right? That share the same kinds of feelings and experiences and thoughts and ideas and behaviors that I share and can tell me, you know, like be a mirror to let me see me. It takes a lot of courage to look at myself. Came here November 15th, 1990 on the back of another recovering addict, and I would be utterly remiss if I didn't tell you about that. That's usually where I start my sharing. Because when I think about the relationship that I had with this human being, when I think about the labor of love that he demonstrated, it puts me where I need to be in my spirit. And I ain't scared of y'all. Mm-mm. No, see, because I know now what I need to know. And all that I need to know is that all of us are in here for the same reason. You might not think you are, but we are. And it's just to share the spirit of love. So I know that, even if you don't, I do. I came here November 15th, 1990 on the back of another recovering addict. His name was Avon J., fine upstanding member, Narcotics Anonymous, 12-step member. He was in position November 15th, 1990. He was on his mission, God's mission, to be obedient. I believe we all on that mission. Mm-hmm. And he going to get us there one way or the other. You can come standing up, walking, or he going to drag your ass in there. One or two. It's the journey of recovery. That's the way it go. It go to God. That's where it go. You know, you call it whatever, but it go to God. You know, and I'm eternally grateful. And he told me like some simple things, gave me some simple directions. He said, sit down. Very simple thing. I didn't have a clue. Didn't have an idea what sitting down was going to do. I was ill as a research monkey. And there was a guy standing up here sharing. Well, he was talking. To me, he was talking. Come on, God, one more time. He was talking. But he was actually sharing. Right? And what he was sharing was his life experience going through the day without picking up a drink or a drug. Now, he said that things like, you know, he lost his job. His wife left. The dog bit him. He lost the door key. Right? And he said, but he didn't use. And I couldn't make the connection because he got me when the part where when the wife left. I had put something, I put you in the neck on that one. But he said, but I didn't use. And what I gathered was, then you mean to tell me you can go through life experiences, you can make some choices and decisions, you can have some hurt, you can have some pain, you can have some rejection, you can have some losses, some things can happen to you, and you don't have to shoot dope, Eddie. That's good news. That's good news. See, because I'm an addict, I use cuz. If there's anything that I hate about this wretched disease that I got, is that I'll use for nothing. Nothing. I'm a meat maker. Meat makers make it. Meeting makers make it to where? To another meeting so they can keep making it. Got clean November 15th, 1990. Got a sponsor, got a home group. My sponsor, I call him the gentle giant. He's, I don't want to be like my sponsor. But I want to do the things. I'm going to do the best that I can. I don't want to be like my sponsor, but I do want to learn how to practice the qualities that he's practiced in his life that allowed him to stand up straight and walk straight in his life. And that's what I notice about my sponsor, because I watch him. He walks straight in his life most of the time. He's at it. Come from where I come from. He started me on the process of the 12 step, and they was talking about, like, you know, like the job is like an inside out job. You know what I'm saying? It's like it don't work from the outside in, it works from the inside out. That means I got to go inside, take a look at those things about myself, right, that causes me oftentimes to make choices and decisions that leads me into some type of destruction. I got the thing. You know that thing that cries out for self-destruction. Do yourself, Eddie. Yeah, do yourself. You don't need to wait for nobody to do you. You do you. Because you ain't shit. You never was shit. And you ain't never going to be shit, Eddie. I got to, I tell y'all, I got talking disease to talk. He talk. 12 Steps in Narcotics Anonymous. They say, that is the solution to the thing. Mm-hmm. There is a solution to the thing. And the solution is my ability to stand on the spiritual principles that's within the 12 Steps in Narcotics Anonymous when it comes time to make a decision on how I need to respond to the given. Deal with what's right in front of you. What choices and decisions are you going to make, Eddie, to respond to what's right in front of you? Are you still slipping and sliding, peeping and hiding? You still trying to get over, get under? I came here, man, and I had the royal butt whipping, and I wanted to stay. I was clear about it. I wanted to stay, and I wanted more of what the thing had to offer. So I got busy. I got busy. I put the code of recovery on, and it fit. It fits, son. Damn. Paid my child support. It's hope. It's hope in Narcotics Anonymous. It's hope. It's hope. And what I come to understand for my recovery, for this addict, the measure, the reference point, the gauge of my recovery is directly associated with my relationship with you. See, because recovery for me says that I take a better me to you. A better me. Not a right me, not a good me, not a perfect me, a better me. Better. Because I ain't going to hit the mark all the time. And I need to be careful about that. Because I got the thing, you know what the thing say. You either don't do enough, or you do too damn much. The thing. They say in the literature, it talks about, you know, that destructive force and that devastated lifestyle. You know, I lost the ability to love and to feel love and to give love, receive love. I, the human touch, the loving touch. I'm a grown-ass man, and I need to be touched. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the thing say, the thing, you don't need a damn thing. You don't need nothing. You can do you. Recovery don't work by yourself. Mm-mm. So I start to make some choices and decisions. I start to respond to those other facets of my life, like fatherhood. Fathered some children. Sperm donor, what they call me. But God gave me a second chance. God gave me a second chance. And I have three beautiful children that I fathered. And I'm working real hard to make sure that I change their perspective of who I am in their life. Now, they're all grown. They have children. Blessed to have 8 grandchildren. I'm blessed. But it is in my ability to relate to them, in spite of what they do. Because it's not about them. It's about my ability to appropriately respond to them. Can you be unselfish, Eddie? Just because they ain't give you nothing for your birthday, can you feel the feeling, let it go, and do something for them on their birthday? Eddie, can you do it? Can you go to work on time and leave when you're supposed to? And what I realized that it becomes real important to me to be able to take a better person. But what I always got to look at, not what was done to me, what is saying Nave Step? I got to look at what it say.
What part did I play?
Damn. I'm trying to tell you what she did. What the hell does that got to do with the part I'm telling you she? I jumped the gun. So I put the code of recovery on, and it fit, and I was wearing it well, and I wanted more of what the thing had to offer. And what I realized is that the more recovery that I wanted, it meant that I had to learn how to appropriately respond to others. Appropriately. What's appropriate? Don't cause hurt, harm, or danger. You. Because that's what you've always done. You've always reached in and took. Give a little. All right? Now, you need to understand that I begin to understand that I don't have that ability in and of myself because I got the thing. So it becomes real important for me to get a connection with a greater source of strength and courage, and the literature calls it a God of my understanding. And I start to formulate this relationship with this God of my understanding. I'm talking about the God of my, the God that didn't, that the man was in the basement of the church and he hurt little Eddie and he wasn't there. And I'm talking about the bike that I didn't get for Christmas and the cheese that I had to eat. You got to deal with that. You got to go back, Eddie. You got to go back and get that little boy that you left standing in the basement of that church. You got to go back and get him. You gotta go back and get him. And I didn't want to go back and get him. Because I did a whole lot of shit so y'all wouldn't know who the hell he was. Yeah. Get Lord Eddie. He'll do it. He'll do anything. Get him. Yeah, I'll do it. Because I don't want you to see the hurt and the shame and the guilt that that little boy had. That man hurt me in that damn basement, God damn it. And he told me that I couldn't never tell nobody. And I didn't never tell nobody. I took that shit to a bag of dope. And I took that bag of dope and I ain't need no damn body. I give a damn about nothing. In and out of jail, hurting people, hurting myself. What part did I play? I didn't want to be no junkie, man. I didn't want to be no junkie, no junkie dude. I didn't want to be no junkie dude, man. Cause I was a handsome, dark skin, waved, step. Now what? I didn't want to be no junkie dude, man. But the thing was hollering for me. It didn't say, get you. And it wasn't only about the physical devastation. It didn't say the devastation was emotional and spiritual as well. That thing reached inside of me, man, and twisted me so bad. So when I got to the place, the place they called, they say it's at the end of the road. I'm talking about like it ain't nothing at the end of the road. Ain't nothing there. Ain't no more dope, man. Ain't nothing. And then they gotta make a decision here at the end of the road. And I knew I didn't have, like, whatever what the people say about the God that I didn't have it, but I wanted to take one shot, man. They say, you know, they say you can do something. The God say that you can do something. At the end, I'm saying. What it say, the utter cry from the depths of my soul, God, oh, please. I'm talking about like not being able to come up with nothing. Good God of mine, if I could have came up with something, boy, I'd have had a different clean date. So yeah, when I came, I was done, man. I was done. Stick a fork in it, I was done. And I was willing to do anything not to go back. So I listen to people share. And I listen to my sponsor in the fifth step process. rock me in his arms like I was his baby. Say it wasn't your fault, Eddie. It's all right. It wasn't your fault. God damn, it's some freedom in the fifth joint, man. I'm saying if you do it from the heart, I'm just telling you, it's some freedom in the fifth step. And when my sponsor told me it wasn't my fault and it was all right, he said, you can live and you ain't got to carry that shit no more. I said, oh, damn. Oh, man. So I just stuck my chest out a little bit. Thank God I just stood up straight. You know what I'm saying? And I was meeting, going to meetings in the home group and secretary and NA stuff. And I wanted some nookie. I mean, y'all say y'all was getting some. But I didn't feel real good about myself. And my method of using was intravenous. I shot dough from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. And if I take my clothes off and stand before you naked, I look like the worst thing in the world. So I ain't fitting to ask no woman for nothing, man. I mean, now y'all need to know. Let me digress for a minute. I talk a lot of bullshit. Now I do. As a matter of fact, I'll act like I'm gonna do it, but I ain't. Forget I said that. I wanted, it wasn't no so much as just some nookie, but I wanted, yeah, I did. I wanted validation of my manhood through a woman. Yes, I did. That's right, I said it. And I was 12 was stepping. I was the NA, and I was good. And then and I was at the marathon. She said, "I got 2 minutes, and I ain't got time to tell you about it. All I can tell you is this. All I can tell you is this. There's a lot of things that happen on the road to recovery. There's a lot of choices and decisions that I made." Made a major one for 15 years. I'm telling you, I put 2 feet in it. You ever give something your best shot? Somebody take your best and kick it to the curb like it ain't shit. Oh man, I wish I had the time to tell you, but I can tell you this. I formulated the ability to look at myself and realize how important it is for me to identify the part that I play. See, I tell you real quick. See, I put the wrong damn shoes on in that situation. I put the guard shoes on. I didn't know I did that. See, I wanted to snatch her through life experiences. You don't need to learn that. I know it. Come on. You don't need to just come on. Come on. And then one time she pulled back. She said, no, I need to do me. Damn, I wish I could tell you. I feel like telling you. But look, hey, see me another time. I tell you about it. But anyway, what a difference a day made. What a difference a day made. Eighth step say it's real important for me to identify the part that I play. And the tenth step say it's real important for me to continue to see the part that I play in any situation. If anything go down and I'm there, I better look at me before I look at you. That's the process. That's the process in this new way of life. In this new way of life. And it ain't always mean that I'm wrong now. ain't always mean that, but it means that I better be quicker to look at me than I am to look at you. Before I pull your list out, I better pull mine out. Because if I don't, your defects can become my shortcomings.
Our second speaker is Brenda W. from South Potomac.
Hi, family. I'm Brenda, and I'm an addict. I want to thank Eddie for sharing. I really enjoyed your sharing. And I also want to thank him for saying a prayer with me when we sat down, because I told him how nervous I was. And I thank God that he put people in my life that will stop and say a prayer with me and for me, because I was nervous. I've been up all day. I've been in service all day. I saw him sleep, and I wanted to be doing what he was doing about right now, you know. I have 7,289 days today. Thanks to computers, I know that, you know. My clean date is May the 3rd, 1989. From that day to this day, I haven't used, and it's because of this program. When I got that topic, the first thing I thought about, too, was inventory. That's what this talks about. You know, I was thinking today about, I'm one of seven children. And, you know, when you got a house full of kids, a whole lot of stuff going on. You know, like somebody may not take the trash out, somebody may have broke something. Somebody may have took something. And there's so many of us, you can blame. You ain't got to take responsibility. You let your parents try to figure it out, you know, and hope y'all tell the truth, you know. And I could hide in that kind of stuff, you know, for so long. And so I ain't have to own up to nothing most of the time. I just let somebody else take the blame, you know, and be responsible. I remember as a kid, I was a big isolator. And I just wanted to be... I wanted to be happy. You know, I thought things made you happy. And my parents couldn't give me things because there were so many of us, you know. And I believed that if I had things and what I saw people on TV have, then I would have been all right, you know. And so I did a lot of fantasizing. I stayed in books. I used to love to read books and imagine that I was those people either on TV or in the books, you know. And I used to do a lot of reading, and I used to read, I'm a really a good girl. You know, but I used to read bad boy stuff, you know. And I used to read about drugs. I knew nothing about it other than what I read. And what I read was, you know, if you did coke, that was a rich man's drug. And but if you did dope, then, you know, you was a junkie. That's all the education I had on it, you know. And so when I got in this program, I didn't know I was a junkie, you know, because I had started off with the marijuana, then that grew to something else and something else. And in the end, I was snorting dope. There was nowhere left for me to go but to shoot dope. I didn't get there, but I know I was eligible. I was going there, you know. But like I said, I did a lot of fantasy. And I'm a military brat. I need to say that, too. And Gene and Kenneth Robinson had the kids that was always proper and polite, so we had to live up to this image, you know, that every time they saw us, we were always doing things proper. But when we got home, we was told, you stupid, the older you get, the dumber you get. You know, I had to always wear these masks on the outside, you know, and go home and deal with that reality that I felt like nothing. Absolutely nothing, and lower than a footprint. And I started using to escape my own little world. And what I did was got with people. That's a dog. I just noticed that. Is that real? Oh, okay. I know I'm tired. I thought I was seeing things, right? No, but when I went to school, I got with people that was doing all the fun things, you know. And the first time I used a drug, I was at my junior high school, Hart Junior High School, and I used it. We were sitting under the porch, and the guy that I was with, who was my boyfriend, turned me on, and he was so different. My father, like I said, he was in the military, and my boyfriend, he was from Southeast. And so my father wore a uniform, it was pressed and it was starched, and he walked out and with a briefcase, and he went to work every single day. He had two jobs, and he was just a, you know, upstanding gentleman. Well, my boyfriend was a thug. He wore his hat backwards, he pimped, he had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and that was very attractive to me. And he could cuss, and he told me how to cuss. And and I would say stuff like, you know, you stupid motherfucker. And he would say, no, it's motherfucker, you know. And I would say, you know, like, oh, shit. And he said, no, shit, you know. And so I wanted to be something that I wasn't from the very beginning, you know. And I hung out with this guy, and, you know, I used the drugs, and one thing, like I said, led to another. And he was with me along the way, my ex-husband. And I really, you know, we got married. And all I knew about marriage was what I saw my parents had. You know, they really didn't communicate unless they were drinking and having a party. And all the other times, they were fighting. And so that's what I thought marriage was. You know, but I thought also what I saw on TV, with the skills I had and took into that marriage, and fantasizing what it should have been from what I saw on TV, it was a colossal mess, you know, because he didn't live up to my expectations. He was supposed to do everything that I needed him to do to make me happy, you know, and even when he cheated on me, and I would leave him, but I would go back because he always had something that I needed, and that was the drugs, you know. And my self-esteem was so low that, you know, I kept going back. And it got to the point where it was very physical, and then I had babies along the way, and I used them as an excuse. You know, but every time my family would find out, I would blame him. You know, yeah, he did this to me. But why was I going back? That was the question. You know what he is. You know what he does. Why do you keep playing a part in that? You know, why do you keep accepting it? Because that's all I had, I thought, you know. I finally got the courage to leave him. Because the drug use got so bad. And he was my half partner. I found that out in treatment. You know, they said stay away from him because he ain't nothing but a big rock and a big bag of dope. And I said, they just trying to break us up, you know. And you had to blame everybody, right? And but I heard some things when I went in there. And one of them was stay away from slippery people, places, and things. And, you know, when I finally surrendered, like Eddie was talking about, you know, I didn't need to go around him. But before I surrendered, before I truly surrendered, because they said stay away from slippery people, places, and things, and he was slippery. And this one time I went around there, I mean, nothing changed. He was still seeing other women, you know, but the disease, that thing told me, go let him see how good Narcotics Anonymous works. And I went around there with my happy self, and he had a girl over there, and we got into this terrible physical fight. And he took my pocketbook. And by then I could fight, though. I couldn't fight before, but I had learned how to fight. And I fought him back that night, right? But I got in my car. He pissed me off so bad. I got in my car, and I drove away. And then some that thing, it said, go back, you know. It hit his car, you know. And I drove back, and I hit his car. And then I drove away, and that thing kept talking to me. You know, he showed off in front of her. You need to go back again. And I drove back again, and I hit his car again, you know. And then that thing said one more time, you know, I don't know who he think he was messing with. Right? And I drove back. And this time he was outside, and he had a gun, and he shot it. Bam. I said, he done lost his damn mind. Normal people would have went the other way. I took my car and went in. I don't know what gear it was, but I was aiming for him this time. But God turned that car around, and it smashed his car to pieces. I came too, right, after that. And I called my sponsor the next day. I was so scared he was going to kill me, because y'all know how y'all men are about cars. And I told my sponsor, I said, you know, I told my sponsor what I did. My sponsor said, well, what does that tell you? I said that I'm jealous. You know, my sponsor said, no. But what does it tell you? I said, I don't like to see him with other women. No, my sponsor said, what it should tell you is without a drink or a drug, you crazy as hell. You know. And that was the beginning of recovery for me. Because that's when I understood that without anything, I could kill myself or somebody else. I understood that, and I understood that I needed to do something because I didn't want to die now. You know, I had 60 days clean then. I didn't want to die. I wanted to live. You know what I'm saying? And what really scared me, what really propelled me to do something different was he called me later on that day, and he said, the next day he said, I don't know why, but I still love you. That scared me. That scared me. So I understood that the problem wasn't outside of me, it was inside of me, you know, and that I needed to work on me, you know, and I needed to do whatever it took, because he wasn't going to make me happy. He wasn't going to keep me clean, you know, and I knew that my behavior, if that didn't change, then I wasn't going to stay around here. So that's when recovery really began for me. And I got to working on myself. I'm so grateful that I have a sponsor that believes in working these steps and going not just halfway through, because that tell you half the story. You got to go through all 12 steps. And I'm at that point, this point in my life now, where it's all about looking at me. You know, because I came in here, too, I was so angry. I was an angry, angry person. I remember, too, my sponsor saying, you're just angry. And I'm like, okay, what did I say so I don't say it again? You know, especially around my sponsor. How do they know? How do people know? It's they can see it, you know. And I didn't want to continue being that person. I don't want to continue to be a petty person, a non-feeling person, not emotional, not concerned, no concern for other people. I want to be different. And that's what this program offers me, an opportunity, if I get to working on myself. I could stay around here for all of these days and do nothing and be the same person that I was, you know. I'm not a perfect person, but I am a better person, you know, as a result of this program and these steps. I've had some things that I had to deal with, especially it's in a lot of areas, but especially in the child-rearing areas, because I have a stepdaughter. And when my husband and I got married, that was the toughest thing for me to do, was to invite this child into my life and into my heart. And I went through something with that. I did. And God is so good because he didn't have to change her. He had to change me because I wanted that girl to be a certain way and act a certain way, you know. And I did not like her at first because it was me. She had something I wanted or didn't have, and that was she had a relationship with her father. I was jealous about that, you know, but all I could see was her. I couldn't see the part I was playing. I would talk to my sponsor and my network about that till I was blue in the face, and I would tell my sponsor how bad I treated that girl, and I say, but she still talked to me. And my sponsor said, because she's more courageous than you are, you know. And but I thank God for the freedom that I could share that with somebody and get better. Y'all helped me grow up in that area. Today, we have a beautiful relationship because of this program, because of continuing to look at the part I'm playing. You know, did God put that girl in my life to make amends to this abortion I had years ago? I understand that today, you know. I couldn't figure out how I was going to make amends to that baby that I aborted when I was, I think, 16 years old. Now, through meditation, because I had that baby on my list, and through meditation, I was meditating one night, and the thought of that child came on over me again, because it haunted me for so long that I did that. And while I was sitting in the tub meditating, the thought of the child came to me again. I said, God, how am I going to make amends to this baby? And God spoke to me, and I know it was God, because I don't say stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Said, treat your stepdaughter right, you know. And that's when I knew her purpose for being in my life, you know. And it's just miraculous. I no longer today expect people to make me happy. You know, happiness comes from the inside. You know, happiness comes from me being healthy, taking care of myself. You know, going to meetings, praying, trying to grow spiritually. You know, doing the right thing for the right reason. When somebody bothers me or upsets me, what's going on with me? You know, I try not to judge too. I'm very judgmental, but I'm working on trying not to judge too harshly. As somebody used to always say, you know, they ain't say you're not going to judge. Just don't be so harsh, because your turn coming too, Brenda. You know, so, you know, just, you know, try to be patient with people. Try to understand. I'm living with, my mother's living with me now. And that's another very difficult relationship. I cried to my sponsor for a lot of years about wanting my mother to get better. And my sponsor tell me for a lot of years, this just might be the best she gets, you know, because she got a disease, and it's painful. And the same patience I have to show y'all, I have to show my mother, but I get irritable, you know, because I want her to have it now. I want her to get this thing, you know. But I'm really grateful that God keeps giving me an opportunity to grow, and I love my mother, you know. But when I see her, probably how she saw me a lot, you know, messed up, incoherent, I get so disappointed. And I'm disappointed at the disease. I know that today. I know it today. But sometimes I react to her. And so, each day is a different day that I can do better. Some days I do good in that area. And some days I don't. But I am grateful. Like, I was leaving today, and she had been up drinking all night, and I didn't want to go in there and kiss her goodbye. That's my mother. And so I pushed past that stuff. Because I just didn't, it's painful. It's really painful. But I went and kissed my mother goodbye, you know. And, you know, and so I'm just, that might be the best she get, Mike, I know. I love my sponsor. If you don't think you got the best sponsor in the world, you better get a new sponsor. You know, I love my sponsor. I love my sponsees, too. In fact, I love this whole room, right? But, yeah, that the inventory, the opportunity, God gave us the privilege to continue to look at ourselves. My sponsor, too, I talk a lot about my sponsor, but my sponsor has helped me in so many ways, especially with balancing my emotions. You know, my sponsor talks about not letting people pull you into where they are. You know, that you gotta maintain your composure, not let them get you to the other side. And that is something that I try to carry with me at work, at home, in most relationships that I have. You know, because it's so easy for me. And our 10th step talks about we're creatures of habit. We're vulnerable to our old ways of thinking and reacting. And I'm a reactionary person. You say something, I got to say something back. I got to have the last word. Even if what you said was right, I still got to put a I told you on it. You know, I always got to end with something. So, you know, but this step allows me to have boundaries, the 10th step. I can create boundaries. You know, that if you having a bad day, I don't have to pick your stuff up. You know, and if I'm having a bad day, I can stop. I can do a spot check. I can see what's really going on with me. Because a lot of times it's because those things that the 10th step talks about, I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Or fearful. You know, that I want to always fight back. So the privilege to take inventory, that's something, that's a gift. You know, that's a gift I see that God has given us in this program, that at any given time of the day, if something is disturbing me, then I really need to look at me. You know, and I'm so petty that it's little stuff. Like, if you came in the room and you dropped something on the floor and didn't pick it up, I'm upset, you know? So that's the kind of stuff that I need to learn how to let go of, you know, not take on. I have a job that I'm considered the subject matter expert on that job. And I have to go to a lot of meetings, right, every day, because they want to pick my brain with a little bit is left. And that's by the grace of God, too. But, you know, the fear says, when are they really going to find out you don't know nothing? You know? You know? When is the gig going to be up? But going inside, I know that I know. That's the thing keep talking to me. That disease is still want me to not think good of myself. You know, it still wants to keep me trapped. My disease is still working. Even with 7,289 days, my disease is still ready for me to use. If I don't use it, it's settled for me being miserable, frustrated, angry, you know. So I keep pressing on. I used to avoid going to those meetings for a long time because I would say meetings are annoying me at work. I don't have time for that. I got work to do. But the reality was I was going in there with all these PhDs and everybody, they got triple degrees and everything. I didn't think I measured up. You know, I was fearful. And my sponsor said, if you don't go, and I'm going to keep exposing myself. I don't care how much clean time I have. I'm telling on me because I want to get better. So I told my sponsor I was avoiding the meetings. And my sponsor said, when you do that, you're not allowing God to use you. So I need to stay out the way. I need to stay out the way and let God have his way, you know. But the only way I can do that is to continue to be honest, to continue to show up for this program, continue to tell on my raggedy tail. You know, continue to look at Brenda and leave you the hell alone. You know, and that's what I love about this program. How much time do I have? Okay. I'm going to say this to be quiet. I've been in service all day. And it's a wonderful thing. If you're not up here serving, giving it back, you should, because I am. You know, because I've been on convention information. I've been in the money room. I've been in registration. And I'm here. You know, and it's enough service. I'm going to take this opportunity to do this, too. It's enough service for everybody to get involved in. Get on the HUD squad. Get on something. Do something. Serve this convention. You know, be in service. You know, it ain't just supposed to come down here and have fun. Now, tomorrow I'm off. I'm going to have fun. But whatever you do, give back. You know, show the newcomer that's coming along that this is how we stay here. We stay plugged in. That's another thing I look at the part I play in. I'm still involved in service. I go to the jail, Upper Marlboro Jail. I'm on H&I. That's the best committee you could ever be on. Yeah. Woo-hoo. And I mean, because this just, we still got to get involved. And if, like I said, if you don't have nothing to do, there's plenty that you could sign up for. And take the opportunity to give back what was so freely given to us. And that's really enough out of me. And I just want to thank y'all for being here. And thank you for letting me share.